he said, she said, or technically speaking and simply put.
Hello, Tracy.
Hello, Corey.
You know, I just can't get that song out of my mind.
Which one?
The one about low expectations.
Oh, gosh, I know.
You're singing it today. I remember I was in the RV down in Alabama, and you had to go back home and look after Ruby, and I was there all alone, and I just kept hearing this song over and over again. It was about this guy that had such low expectations. Actually,
why don't you sing it? Just give us a few bars. Come on.
I can't even remember how it goes now.
I'm not singing it. There's no way.
Yeah, no way. I'm not going to get any credos for my voice. But no. You know how something sticks in your mind and you can't get rid of it?
Yes, I do. That drives me nuts when that happens. And I think it's happened to everybody.
You know what listeners. The remedy is? The remedy is you got to go listen to the song. And then it kind of unloads the program from your brain. Because I tried that once. And I had the song stuck in my mind. I couldn't get rid of it. So I actually turned my iPod on and listened to it. And then I forgot
that
about
cured
it.
You.
So I was craving it. It was almost like a food craving.
George Costanza had that too. Remember in Seinfeld where he had a song in his head and he couldn't get it out? If you've seen, you know, Seinfeld. So anyway, yeah. And then what happens is you're singing this song that's in your head and then it gets into my head and it's like... It's addicting.
Yeah, no kidding.
So there you go.
Yeah, so the thing is with food, if you have a food craving, should you give in to the craving or should you deny it?
Depends on what the craving is. It could be liver and onions, like I crave liver and onions.
How many people crave liver and onions?
Well, you know, you never know. I don't know. I'd like to know.
People craved liver and onions.
When I go to Cranbrook, we have a liver and onions club. And every time I go to Cranbrook to visit my sister in the East Kootenays in British Columbia, we go out for liver and onions. Weird, I know, but we love
it. Here it goes. I'm living up to her low expectations. Because her low expectations are high enough for me.
Oh, well, okay. Whatever you do, honey, don't give up your day job.
No. Well, I think it's time for He Said, She Said to lead into your favorite time. What's cooking, my dear?
What's cooking is homemade cranberry sauce. Well, it's that time of year where the turkey is the main course for many family holidays. And I made for the very first time my own recipe of cranberry sauce because Ruby and I really like cranberry sauce on our turkey. But I won't buy that tinned white sugar crap. So I was forced to make my own. So I scrambled around with various recipes. I Google, you know, like I do all my recipes. And then I come up with my own recipe that is just right for us and my taste buds.
Wasn't right for me.
Yeah, you're not into sauces and
I wouldn't
condiments.
Know if it's good or bad. I'm going to assume it's
you
great.
Have. I can't even believe you've never tried it.
I just don't like
it. Just
the
really
thought of it.
Annoys me. Anyway, Ruby's my little guinea pig. She's
I don't like sauces and creams and gunks and gravies.
But
and
sometimes
stuff.
When the turkey meat is really dry, and sometimes on my turkey, the breast is a little dry. That really nice cranberry sauce, just and in a turkey sandwich or a turkey pita.
But I like to dunk the dry white turkey meat in your beautiful homemade dressing.
Oh, yeah.
The everyday
one. It just
one.
Isn't the same, but I understand, yeah. But cranberry sauce, it goes like, I guess, mint jelly with lamb, and I guess if you eat pork and applesauce and horseradish with roast beef. So I came up with it's delicious, it's sweet with a tinge of tang, and it's really, really healthful. So it's really super duper easy to make, and if I knew it was this easy to make, I would have been making it years ago. For some reason, I just thought that cranberry sauce was really difficult to make. I don't know.
Was it difficult to make?
I just finished saying, as usual, you never listen to what I say. It was very easy.
Well, I'm tuning you out. Otherwise, I couldn't take it.
Oh, hello. Anyways, sometimes it's really hard to find the bag of cranberries because they only have them at certain times of the year. But you can always buy the frozen, unsweetened cranberries. They're just frozen. So I use like 4 cups of fresh cranberries and then 1 cup of freshly squeezed orange juice, 2 teaspoons of grated orange peel from the orange that you used, and 1/2 to 3/4 cup of unpasteurized honey to sweeten, and 1/2 teaspoon of cinnamon.
That looks pretty clean.
It's very, very clean. I add the cranberries to a saucepan with the orange juice and the peel, and I add the cinnamon. and I cover the pan, and then I bring it to a boil and simmer uncovered, stirring frequently. And when all the berries have popped and they get mushy, then you remove it from the stove and let it stand for about 10 minutes. And that's when you add the honey to sweeten. So if you like it a little bit tartar, use less honey. If you like a little sweeter, add more honey. And you can freeze the leftover sauce if you have it left over, or you can add the leftover sauce to make muffins. Add it into your muffin mixture or your cookie mixture, or you can add it onto some winter squash. There's a multitude of things that you can use it for. Ruby's boyfriend just eats it out of the bowl. He won't eat the
turkey.
That's
the one thing that Ruby's boyfriend likes.
Yeah, one thing he eats. He likes.
I've never known anyone that doesn't like vegetables.
Yeah, well, not you know
or
what?
Salads.
I have met more people as I go out there and I talk to people who do not eat vegetables, and I thought, how in the world can you not eat vegetables? But there are people. Okay.
No, I was just being facetious. I know
seriously.
Thousands of people that don't like vegetables.
I mean, but they never eat them in their diet.
It's bizarre.
I just can't even imagine it. But anyways, I guess that's just the way it is. So cranberries are very, very healthful. They contain more disease-inhibiting phenols than red grapes and have a very high ORAC score. And ORAC meaning oxygen radical absorbance capacity.
Yeah, I'm very impressed you were able to say that.
Oh.
So let's talk about that for a second. What does that mean? Okay, now you're able to say it. So you know what it is? It's like these electrons are donated from antioxidants. And if you take in a food that's real and alive and fresh and hasn't been denatured or destroyed or ripped apart or sterilized, then these antioxidants, anti meaning they oppose oxidation. So we've got this process of oxidation going on inside the body all the time. In fact, that's what does us in. We oxidize slowly but surely. And so what we want to do to improve quality of life and preserve function is we want to bring into the body, into the bloodstream, a food substance that is very rich and high in these ORAC factors, because what they do is they are going to balance the equation in favor of health. So if you drink and smoke and eat a crappy diet, what you have is a lot of oxidation going on, but not a lot of antioxidants to neutralize, scavenge those free radicals, and protect our cells from damage. So how was that?
I knew that. You just jumped right in. I was going to say exactly the same thing.
I know you knew that.
Of course. But traditionally, cranberries were used to fight female urinary tract infections. Any ladies out there who have had a bladder infection, hello, you reach for the cranberry juice without the sugar.
I bet you this is even better. Eating this stuff would be better than
yeah. But
than
what about the honey in there? Well, if it's unpasteurized, like a raw honey mixed with the cranberries, would that still
no,
work?
I don't think so. I think that the idea with the cranberry is they have something called hyperic acid, and that is what you want in the urinary tract. It's an
acid alkaline
balance.
So the honey doesn't matter if you add the honey to it, because
you know what? I think if you ate this stuff on a regular basis, maybe worked it into your diet, maybe that would prevent the infection.
Yeah, exactly.
And honey, I mean, that's an anti-infectant right there.
Because usually a bladder infection would occur maybe after Halloween when you've had too many sweets, maybe after Christmas time when you've had way too much rich food, or after Thanksgiving. Anytime when there's a lot of food, heavy food, a lot of celebration going on, that's when we're more prone.
Yeah, plus I'm going to defend the honey. I'm going to say that it doesn't act like isolated sucrose or fructose or corn syrup, that it has entirely different properties. Even though it's heated, I still think that it's in its natural form, and it's constructed in a way that does not violate the chemistry of the body.
Well, there you have it then. Okay. So, you know, the cranberries also can be protection against a wide range of ailments, to include heart disease, stroke, cancer, and even tooth decay. So cranberries are a rich source of flavonoids, and they act as a major infection fighter. So they're in season, usually through October through December. And so I'd really like to hear your thoughts on more cranberries in your diet, so you can use it for a multitude of things. Cranberries are best in season, which is October through December, which is now. So this autumn, try using more cranberries in your diet. Use them in your muffins, in your cookies, in your loaves. Just make the sauce and use it in a multitude of things. Go wild and crazy with the sauce.
Yeah, and stay away from that.
Use it as a sandwich instead of mayonnaise.
Stuff.
Instead of mayonnaise, use it. right? Get the kids into it. It's really helpful because it's sweet. You can make it sweeter, right?
Yeah.
So it's really nice. It's got that nice cinnamon. You can add cinnamon or nutmeg. You don't have to add the cinnamon to it, but that cinnamon gives it a nice kind of celebration. Yeah. Flavor to it.
And so, for all the people that say, well, what's a little bit of sugar in the cranberries? Well, why not give your little two-year-old a couple of puffs on your cigarette each morning? Okay? What's a couple of puffs?
Yeah.
That's how I see the sugar.
I know.
You know, it's lethal.
Yeah.
And
listen to this now. Corey's teaching his Principles of Sports Nutrition course. And we're on our seventh week now. And one of the gals, she says, I stopped eating sugar. I took it out of my diet and stopped eating all these heavy carbohydrates, which was, I guess, whatever bread
pasta.
She was eating. Yeah, pasta and buns and bagels and things. And then she says, I made my kids some spaghetti. She said, and I just ate 2 teaspoons of it just to finish off the plate, like mothers do, you know, finish the plate. And she said, all of a sudden, 5 minutes later, I had a craving for sugar. So it's not just that 1 or 2 little teaspoons that you have. It's what it does. It's the after effect.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That was my point. If you eat a little bit of sugar, it's going to invite the chemistry that's already established from years of being addicted.
Yeah.
It's like, why do they tell alcoholics never to touch alcohol again? They don't say, well, just have alcohol once in a while.
Yeah.
It's because of what they become when they consume that alcohol.
Yeah.
And it just takes one swig.
Yeah.
You know, like you just chug back one swig of whiskey and I guarantee you that you're going to go through that whole bottle.
Yeah.
If you have been an alcoholic.
Yeah. So she really noticed the difference because she'd always been eating the same way all the time. And then she went off it for the last 4 weeks onto her new Holly diet.
And she got excellent results.
She lost 3 pounds of body fat and she had lots of energy.
Her digestion
improved. But then
she
went and just had that couple of teaspoons of that spaghetti. And then that just blew it for her. She couldn't believe it. And then she got into the Halloween candy.
It just goes to show you how strong...
It's a ripple effect.
...that connection is. Like, once we establish a relationship with food, there's an imprint made in our brain. And it's like a software in a hardware program. And so in order to really eliminate the craving, you've got to establish a new relationship. They say that you've got to exchange one addiction for another.
Yeah.
You know, like if you're not training and you're giving up cigarettes, get in the gym and start pumping some iron and that'll stabilize your blood sugar and actually start to regenerate the environment.
Well,
but if you don't do something to compensate, you're going to be in trouble.
How many alcoholics do we know who have, you know, going to AA now and they've gained body fat and they are major sugar addictions or are into coffee. They drink Starbucks coffee all the time with this mochas and the whipping cream and they're into major sugar. They've always got sugar.
And they're cigarette smokers.
Yeah. But they don't drink anymore.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, I don't know. They're just replacing one thing for the other. Anyway.
What is the true state that we want to be in, to evolve in? You know, it's ultimately to be free of the addiction and to focus on health and build health.
Yes, exactly.
So I just reviewed recently the 12 steps, and I love the first step. Be honest. Honesty, I think, is absolutely critical and essential. I am an alcoholic. I have a problem or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So you have to admit that, sort of surrender, get down on your knees, and just kind of say, you know what? It ain't working. The program ain't working. And until now, everybody could see that except me. But now I see it. So I'm going to look at the truth, embrace it. Now I'm going to move forward. So what do I do? And I don't really agree with some of those other steps. I don't think there's enough information there to actually restore people who have addictions.
Well, I think what it does is it doesn't make people accountable. And that's the part that we both don't agree on. You've got to be accountable for yourself. You have to take responsibility, but it's saying it's outside of you. You can't help.
They also suggest that a higher power is going to sort of move in and take control and save you from yourself, which I disagree with 100%.
Yeah, we both don't agree with
unless
that.
You understand that only you can save yourself.
Right. You're so the one that...
Your spiritual beliefs are not the issue. If you have to, you know, like God helps those who help themselves, even though that's not in the Bible, it's a proverb that I have some agreement with.
I grew up with that. My mother would instill that in me, whatever that means.
Yes.
Basically, be accountable and work. Help yourself, Tracy.
Yeah,
that's how
what
I
about
was
all of
up?
These religious people that have all these addictions? If God is in them and they're filled with the Holy Spirit or whatever, why aren't they free of the addiction?
Yeah.
So I don't see that in reality working. But I do know people that are free of addictions some of whom are religious and many of whom are not. Mm-hmm. And what they've done is that they have followed the primary principle of alternative functional medicine, and that is, I'm responsible for me and my actions, words, and thoughts, and I have to change everything if I want to change my outcome. So therefore, I'm going to take an accounting of my life, like an accountant does of your business. I'm going to be accountable for me, and then I'm going to initiate all the changes that I need to make. And I am going to do it alone by myself, because ultimately, it's like when you get the urge to poop, what do? Knock on the door or phone someone and say, hey, I got the urge. Can you help me go? No, you got to go by yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what life and health is all about. It's about managing yourself. And so who can crawl inside of you? Who can instill themselves in your brain and actually be in there to fight the demons with you? Right. Nobody.
It would be nice sometimes, wouldn't it?
It would be great. So that's why self-help, education, yeah. empower your brain, yeah. empower yeah. your resources
yeah. Yeah.
to make yourself stronger. Because, hey, if you're weak right now, that's a great thing. It means that you can become stronger.
Yeah.
And get away from this I can't thing. Because every time you say you can't, you're right.
We need to get an acronym for that.
I can't.
That's a new thing we can do this weekend. We'll come up with an acronym for I can't.
Okay, sounds good.
Sounds good, okay.
Okay, so that was...
That's what's cooking. Cranberry sauce, homemade.
All about cranberries. Okay, so who was our last month's special guest?
Last month's special guest was Dr. Jay Wortman. Dr. Jay was a wealth of knowledge. And we saw him on a TV program we watched one Sunday night called My Big Fat Diet.
I'd rather change that to My Big Fat Ass.
Corey.
I really would.
And don't look at me when you say that.
I think that they're being polite. My Big Fat Diet. I think that the name itself is implying.
No. It's from the movie.
Yes, I know.
My Big Fat Greek Wedding, which they all had big
fat
asses.
No, I thought it was promoting a high fat diet.
They were.
My Big Fat Diet. That's
they
what
are.
The fat means.
Yeah,
but that's
they
what
were.
Comes to mind anyway.
They weren't getting rid of the fat anyways. You have to, okay.
I've never seen a big fat person that didn't have a big fat ass. Big, huge, gigantic fat person with a tiny little bubble bum. Okay. Never seen it.
Okay. Moving on. Dr. Jay Wortman, in very simple terms, he explained about insulin sensitivity and the reasons for this. And Dr. Jay seems to be an understanding person and truly interested and cares about his clients and humanity. And through that movie that we saw him do, documentary that he did, My Big Fat Diet, I just said, you know, we got to interview this guy. He's like, just seems totally awesome. And if you listen to the interview, you too will agree. So thank you, Dr. Jay.
Yeah. And we learned, of course, that the hunting gathering diet is still the most profound, reliable diet that any human being can follow and take up. And what does that mean? It means that you incorporate wild game and high quality lean proteins and lots of fresh vegetables, not a lot of fruit. If you sort of study the habits and cultivation process and things that are written about in anthropology and the research in paleontology, what was a hunting gatherer? It was kind of like these West Coast Indians. They were eating fish and they were hunting animals and they could find plants and tubers and berries in season, things like that. Very clean, very simple. But it did have a lot of the great fats, a lot of the essential omega fats. And there's a reason why that we know through the research and data. And he made this statement. I asked him, I said, we don't need carbs in our diet, do we? He said, no, of course not. That's well known. That's been known for 100 years.
Jeez.
Humans do not need to eat carbohydrates ever. People say, how can
you
survive?
When we talk about carbohydrates, we're not just talking about breads, buns, bagels, and pasta.
Yes. Okay. The simple carbs are the foods that are concentrated in the simple sugars.
Right. So, that's
when you break the food down, like, does it have maltose or sucrose or fructose naturally occurring? Or does it have these individual sugars in long chains that make up the polysaccharides, like a potato, for example?
Okay, so when you say, because this could be complicated for a lot of people to understand, is when you say that we don't need any carbohydrates at all, so vegetables are also considered, fruits and vegetables are considered a carbohydrate.
Because they're primarily right. made up of carbs.
Exactly. So, But a lot of people might not know that, right?
Yes.
I know our SNU people know that.
Yes.
But however, so what he's saying and what you're saying is that we don't need those.
No, not
we don't
biochemically.
Because we
have examples of many native peoples worldwide, and the most sustainable, best example are the Plains Indians who hunted the buffalo.
Right.
So they lived in a state of ketosis, which we talked about. And if anyone out there needs to understand what ketosis is, he explained what that is.
Right.
And how it's easy to live in that state. As a matter of fact, when I was in ketosis for my bodybuilding show, I had so much energy, it was unbelievable. And I was lean and ripped. I had no carbs in my diet at all.
And you needed less sleep, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And think of the Indians. They didn't sleep for 8 hours. They took
short spurts.
They slept in sections throughout the day. They took turns actually guarding their camp.
Yeah.
Just like you see in the old Western days.
Like a four-hour stint.
When they have the campfire and they would take turns.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
how humans used to sleep.
Yeah.
So, because you had to protect yourself from predators and from enemies.
And so, you know, so there must be something to that now when you think about the fact that I know for myself, I can sleep like a good 4 or 5 hours straight in a row, no problem. Then I'm wide awake. And then I get up and I'll bake something or I'll do something. And then I want to go back to sleep again. So maybe what's happening is a lot of people can only really sleep 4 hours, but we're forcing ourselves to sleep 8 or 9 hours. And a funny thing that Ruby said to me, because Ruby always had a nap till she went to kindergarten. And she says, Mom, how do you know that you're going for a nap? Or how do you not know you're going to bed at night? How do you know it's just a nap? Which I'm going, I didn't know how to answer that question. How do you know it's just a nap and not full-time bed?
I guess length of
I don't know.
Sleep, the term, I guess.
I don't know.
Timing?
Yeah, how do you do know that? Anyway, Dr. Jay Wortman, thank you very much. That really was a great interview. And you should really go back and listen to that again because it was a fantastic interview.
Yeah, and if you get a chance and you see that on your television listing, check out My Big Fat Diet, the documentary.
Right.
It's a good look at how beneficial eliminating carbs, especially the dirty ones, can be. Okay, let's move on to our next topic, our CHI Highway to Health update.
Okay, so what's happening? We are living in Vancouver and it's getting a little chillier now. We've got the gloves on. I've got my nice, beautiful Vegas scarf on. And I've decided to write a new book, which is pretty exciting.
A new old book.
It's
like the new old Christine.
Yes, exactly. It's very progressive. And it was for a booklet that I had written for a company. And, you know, it really is a sleeper. And a lot of the extractions are from the CSNA.
So I'm going to take credit for that.
And some of my own little stuff in there. But it's called Simple Strategies for Living Lean and Staying Well. And I think it's for anybody. But what I'm really targeting is for men and women who really have never exercised before and really have weight issues. Okay, let's just say over fat issues. They're fat. Okay, let's get real here. And they're intimidated and they're scared and they don't know where to start. So I talk a little bit about insulin. I talk about cortisol. I talk about body typing. I talk about GI, glycemic index, glycemic load. Talk about how to get started. And living lean isn't just about being thin. Living lean is about getting rid of people in your life that are weigh you down.
Extract them.
Exactly. Getting rid of stuff in your house that no longer serves you. You're serving it. What you're doing is you're cleaning it and maintaining it, but you never use it. There's a lot of things that I mean by living lean.
Stuff that makes no sense.
That makes
whatsoever.
No sense at all. But the funny thing is, it took me about a week to finish it. And then, you know, as I go to the gym, I start thinking about more stuff. And I'm walking home and I start to get creative again, more things that I want to write. And then I have a shower and think, oh, I got to add that in. It just never ends. And like Corey said, it's like a CSNA. It started off with 50 pages and then it ended up to be 1,500. So it's really a lot of fun because there's so much knowledge that we have to share. And yes, they are simple strategies. All you got to do is do them. It's not what you do once in a while. It's what you do every day.
I think you got to have a section on that. How do you find whatever it is you need to do it and to stay on track and be consistent?
Because believe me, I could be fat.
No.
Yes, I could be fat. But I've learned the simple strategies or the science or the art, whatever you want to call it, of how to live lean. And it serves me well.
So this is a book on real life. This is not one of those stupid diet books.
No.
This is a real life
story. Write a stupid diet book?
Right? Now, you know, I remember I asked Colgan, why haven't you written a book on weight loss? He said, because none of the publishers will let me print the real goods. He said, I'd have to compromise and come up with some ridiculous, stupid diet. you know, like the grapefruit diet or the pineapple diet or whatever these diets are, they're all stupid and ridiculous.
Yeah.
He couldn't really, you know, get to the point and call a spade a spade.
Yeah, because nobody wants to hear it, you
right.
know?
These people want something that doesn't work.
Yeah.
But they want to hope that it will work.
Yeah.
You know, it's like this exercise equipment on the infomercials. It's so ridiculous.
You know, those things work.
How about the one that you jiggle with your hands
and it would work.
Oh,
but you got to use it. You got to use the damn thing.
The use? No, you're telling me that jiggling that thing is going to build the pecs that that guy has?
No.
He's been bench
pressing
for 10 years, but I'm saying
it could help your arms. It's not about pecs. It's about arms.
It's all about pecs, man.
But anyway, I mean, I've seen so many people, like I said before, we've talked about this before, is that people phone us or email us or they ask us, like, does this piece of equipment work? Because I want to buy it. And we go, sure, the equipment works, but you just got to use it. That's all. It's nothing to do with the equipment. It's you've got to use it on a regular basis. You just don't use it for 20 minutes twice, then put it under the bed and expect it to work.
Yes, but
because
what
people
I'm
say to
is
us,
that when you go in the gym and you have all of the wonderful equipment that's available and compare that to that one piece of equipment at home,
well,
that is going to bore the average person out of their mind.
Of course.
Because it's not functional enough to really do what can be done in the gym with barbells
and
dumbbells.
I would buy a piece of something like that if a day I couldn't make it to the gym. Or I just got lazy. I didn't feel like going to the gym.
You know those push-up bars and that little chinning bar that goes in the door and a skipping rope?
Yeah.
That's what I take on the road and it works in a hotel room.
Yeah.
But I only do that as a supplement, not as a way of life.
No.
But you know what? I do admit that if you just did military calisthenics
and
burpees and deep
push-ups and squats,
that you can achieve an amazing level of fitness.
And just go out for a run, a sprint.
Absolutely.
For sure.
So it is the doing it.
It's the doing it. With intensity.
Yes.
You know, with intensity.
Eye of the tiger.
So I talk about that in the book, too. I mean, you got to put some bloody intensity into it. So I'm pretty excited about it because, you know, these strategies, I do them myself. And I could be fat.
So what are you saying? The reason you're not fat is
because I do these simple strategies.
And is it just one thing?
No, it's a multitude of things. It's
that's
the synergy of everything working together.
Yeah.
You know,
and
so
that's what the public
that's
does
what
not
I want,
want
that's what
to
I want
listen
to share.
To. They don't want to hear that.
And by the way, it's 303 days since I've had my last period.
Yippee!
So I am just, and 12 whole months, 365 days, it's full on menopause. So I'm a case study. Not a head case, a case study. So I'm pretty excited about this because I've had no symptoms at all. Evening primrose, ladies, really works for the hot flashes. So double up on the evening primrose if you're going through menopause.
So are you up to about 40 caps a day now?
It's hot in me bed, I'll tell you, honey.
Now that GLA,
and like
man,
I say, you got nothing to do with
that's magic.
It. Yeah.
We used to have women come into Health Food Store and buy cases of it. Actually, their husbands would come in and buy it for them.
Yeah.
So peace of mind is what it's all about.
Okay, so there you go.
Yes, so let's move on now. You got down here a pet peeve. What's all that about?
Well, Daisy is taking her personal training course.
Isn't that great?
Finally, after all these years.
She passed her first certification.
After all these years, it's her idea now. You know, she fought us tooth and
she's
nail
gonna
on it.
She's going to be a great trainer.
She's going to be great, absolutely.
Daisy Designs.
Yeah, that was just my name, which I hope she really uses, Daisy Designs.
Redesign the world, Daisy.
Yeah, I've talked to her about this for how many years? 15 years.
And she's a hard worker in the gym, huh?
Yeah, and
she's like me.
Good.
She's like so precise. She's like doing an engineering project when she's working out.
But anyway, her and I were on the treadmill the other day, and we were watching these personal trainers teaching their clients. And what they do, these personal trainers, is they don't teach their clients how to train. They go around picking up after their clients. They pick the weight up and they put the weights away for them. When they go to, let's say, to do a lat pull down, they put the weight in for them. They don't make the client do the work.
That's
and
a
the
form
client,
of slavery.
The client is not learning. Oh, sure, it's great for the client. He just stands there and, you know, lifts a few weights around. But the
imagine
point,
if a watchmaker in Switzerland did that for the apprentice and did all the work for them.
But what really
what's wrong
gets
with
to
this
me is you're not teaching
the,
your client. You're not making them accountable. And this goes for everything that we ever talk about is becoming accountable. When we went back to the alcoholic, you're not making your client accountable.
Remember what Vanessa said? She said, is it the inmates in the prison that actually set the pace and create all the standards for the prison? No, it's the people that run the prison, right? Isn't that kind of what you're saying?
Right.
Is it the trainer that sets the standards and makes the client adapt to them? Because if they have to learn what to do, the only way you can learn what to do is to do it all yourself from beginning to end.
Well, this isn't every personal trainer. I am generalizing because there's some really good trainers out there. 80-20
rule.
There's some really good trainers out there, and the trainers that I've had make me do all the bloody work, which I love because that is part of it. Because when you have a personal trainer, that trainer is to teach one how to train, and when that person is not with that trainer, they can go to any gym in the world and they can train on their own. That is a good personal trainer.
Absolutely.
And I have talked to personal trainers, and they've told me I don't want my client to learn how to train on their own, otherwise they won't come back to me. I was shocked and dismayed to hear that, and shame on those personal trainers that believe that.
Well, it's an old paradigm.
Shame on you. Shame on you if that's what you're doing. Absolutely. Because Corey and I at CHI are changing this, because we're teaching people that that's not the way to do it. Everybody, I think, should have a personal trainer at one time in their life.
How many handholders do you need in life?
Well, you know, sometimes you really need some help to learn to execution.
I'm not saying that you don't need help. You know who understands this very clearly? Leon Grams. Bless him. He gets it so clearly. He's a personal trainer and a great one. He just finished CSNA, and he's done the greatest vitamin salesperson in the world, and he's now working on his master's. He brought this to my attention,
yep.
And he wants to create a new business paradigm,
yep.
Like this, where you actually teach the clients how to fish.
Yes.
And then, because he's not afraid. And that's the thing. That's the limiting
factor. They're scared
factor.
They're going to lose clients.
He's
they won't come
afraid.
To me.
He's going to create a great business
I
that way.
I think the personal trainer should choose their clients.
Absolutely. You have to meet my expectations,
buddy. There's a gal
buddy.
Who's called the girl with no name, and she twitters a lot, and she chooses her clients. She says, if you're not ready to work out, then don't even bother coming to me.
Yeah, don't waste my time.
Leon
said, he says he finds no satisfaction in working with someone like that.
Who's soft.
And I can tell you one thing. Remember in the gym, I had to deal with those kinds of people, and I'd say, I'm getting out of this.
Yeah, you could.
I only
want
to work with elite athletes and Olympic athletes who are here, they show up, and they want to work.
See, I don't mind. I mean, teaching dancing, I had the same thing. I had the people with two left feet, or they didn't know their left foot from their right foot, but I slowly got them to understand. Because when I get them to understand what we're doing, like, okay, today we're going to do a cha-cha basic movement with a triple step forward. So they knew what to do because they knew the name of it and they knew the actual step and the breakdown. We go into the gym. I say, okay, today we're going to do chest. We're going to start with an incline dumbbell press. Now, that would sound like ching, chang, chow, chung to somebody.
Which I noticed you've been listening to on the TV lately.
Anyways.
Is that because it sounds like that?
But anyway, if I say that, my client says, okay, I know exactly what that means. They're going to get excited because they're learning. And when they learn, they go tell their friends. And I've had so many people who've taken dancing lessons, and I said, so what did you learn? They don't know. They said, it goes like this. They couldn't do it on their own. They didn't know the name of it, and they didn't even know what dance it was. And they didn't know the last name of their teacher. I'm going, well, what the hell did you learn? But they loved their teacher, and they had a great time.
You know, my test is, I'm going to take any client from any personal trainers, and I'm going to say, okay, come with me into the gym. And without showing them, I'm going to say, now I want you to show me how to squat, bench, deadlift, chin, bar dip, and do some basic core movements.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to provide any instruction.
Yeah.
And if they cannot show me how to do it correctly, that personal trainer is a failure.
Yeah.
They have failed to teach their client how to train independently.
No, but not even that. The point is, those are the most basic, pioneer, hardcore.
They're the best.
Complex.
They're time tested.
Exactly.
Simple.
And if you don't teach, and if you're not doing them yourself, if you're not benching, squatting, deadlifting, then you're not training. Because I do all of those, but I don't lift heavy weights.
Well, it's all relative.
Right, exactly. But to me, okay, I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, I never thought you did from the get-go.
Okay, we're going to get rid of that.
No, we're not going to get rid of that.
So anyway,
let's do the job if we're going to do it, right?
Let's do the job right.
Let's take some pride in what we're doing.
Let's put the, like Andre Potvin says, let's put the personal into personal training. You've got to do it yourself before you go and train other people.
That's right.
Right?
Yep.
So let's do it, folks. Okay, I feel better now.
You know what? When I see these clients, too, I'm going to judge the trainer every time.
We are setting a standard at CHI, and our standards are way above mediocrity. Mediocrity ain't cutting the mustard anymore.
No way.
Get with the program.
Yeah. Let's not celebrate mediocrity. Let's focus on the celebration of life, which is the highest, most evolved, and enlightened state.
Okay, let's do it. I think I like that.
That was a good one. The enlightened
state. That sounds like a glass of red wine for me.
There you go. Okay, so let's finish off because we're way over time. What is your final word?
My final word is by Catherine Pulsifer from Goodbye Manager, Hello Coach. A good coach will hold the team accountable for both their actions and their results.